just make some mention some recollections, some reminiscences of different things that stand out in my mind from Rav Soloveitchik. My first recollections of Rav Soloveitchik were not really from the shiur, but rather from the regular shiur that he gave in the yeshiva, but rather from other lectures. I remember when I was, must have been about 10 years old, I'll have to check the date. My family lived in Philadelphia, and I was going to Yeshiva Ketana in New York. At that time, there was no yeshiva in Philadelphia. And I was too young to, I was staying by my grandparents and all the people, and I was very homesick for my parents. So my father had to take me by train to come home every so often, every month or so. So I remember once my father wanted to take me home to Pesach or something, and the Rav was speaking. Must have been for the Mizrahi. The Rav was speaking that night, so he took. So it was going to be too late. He was going to go hear the Rav, and he was going to go pick me up. So he took me along, and I had to listen to the Rav's Langa Megillah, Langa Drasha. Must have been about 10 years old. I don't know. And then he took me home by train. So that was the first Drasha that I heard from the Rav when he was speaking about the German reparations money, and he was opposed to it. At that time, the German government was offering reparations money to Israel. And the shaila was whether they should accept it or not. So the tilful that the Israeli government had at that time was an ethical tilful. Is it proper to take the money? Because in this way they'll, in a certain sense, be giving a kapara to the Nazis, to the Germans, but they feel as if their conscience was cleared. So Rav Soloveitchik at that time said, forget about the conscience clearing, they have a din of Amalek, and he gave this piece in the name of Rav Chaim, that the din of Amalek is not necessarily go to a biological descendant of this nation, but rather any nation that makes up its mind to wipe out the entire Jewish people. And the halacha says that not only are you not permitted to leave anybody from Amalek alive, you have to kill the men, the women, and the children, all of their property as well. This was the first recollection I had of the Rav. I remember over the years, at that time I didn't know whether yes, no, a little boy. So I was thinking over the years. I thought to myself, it's probably not right. Even if they have a din of Amalek, I can't get back my own money. They stole millions. They stole billions, trillions from the Jews. I can't get back a little bit. So I thought to myself, you know, Mustamed's wrong. But maybe now you see Mustamed's right, because now they have in the newspapers that the Israeli government says that all of the highways, that all the reparations money we use for paving the highways in Eretz Yisrael, they have in the papers now, I think last year, that all the highways have to be redone because they did it wrong the first time. So all the reparations money went down the drain. I remember after that, my father would take me, before the Bar Mitzvah, I don't know, 12, maybe 11, I have to check the dates. The first Yortzeit Rasha I remember stands out in my mind where the Rav is speaking. He used to give the Yortzeit Shir in here because he insisted, and it used to be so crowded. And people would come, the boys would sit here from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to make sure that they get a front seat. They used to sit with their Gemaras and their the 4-volume Gemara and the 2-volume Rambam. And the Rav used to stand over here and sit. I guess he said, I remember. He used to say the Shir over here, and the place was crowded, and it was so crowded, people would stand in the halls, and people would stand outside in the street. And they used to plead with the Rav every year that he should switch the lamp, but all the time he said, no, he has to say the Shir here, this is where his father used to say the Shir. And the people said they didn't think that that was accurate, his father used to say the Shir in the side room. He said, his father said the Shir here, so he wanted to say the Shir in the space manager, that until it was just unbearable. So then he had to move to the big auditorium. So I remember the first Yortzeit Shir that I heard was about Kiddush and Avdol, about Kiddush B'Machon Suder, and about if you get the oven bench, and if you get to say, about Haskaras Min Amora. It made a big Roshan. I remembered, it stands out in my mind today, from Pasha from Zikaron. I used to hear the Yortzeit Roshan. It was Meir Dikad Roshan. Hespedim also, the Rav was noted for his Hespedim. I think most of the people probably didn't get what Dr. Lam and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said yesterday. Dr. Lam started off by saying he thinks the only one who could say a proper Hesped for the Rav would be the Rav himself. Sounded a little funny. What does that mean? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said the same thing. What they meant was that those who remember the old times remember the Rav said knockout Hespedim. Moiridik. I remember the story used to go, there was a legend, I don't know if it's true or not, they said that they once asked the Rav to say a Hesped when someone passed away, he said, sorry, you have to let me know 2 weeks in advance. That's what he used to say. I don't know, maybe it happened, I don't know, but he said quite a few Hespedim that stood out in everyone's mind. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was alluding to some of them yesterday. He would say at the beginning of the Hesped that Al Pidin, He quoted a Medrash. I'm not that familiar with the Medrash. I don't know where it is. He quoted a Medrash that says, if it doesn't show my law, Paskins on the Niftar. Based on the testimony, based on the Gvir status that the Maspidim give. And that's why the Paskin quotes from the Ovel Ravosi, the Kishem Shen Nistarim and Amesim Kach Nistarim and Amaspidim, that if the Maspid exaggerates too much, a little bit exaggeration is understood, then you take off a little bit. But if one exaggerates too much, so that's considered a violation of Eid HaSheker. So he would mention this every so often, the beginning of the Hesped, that the Hesped has to be honest, and you have to size up what the person was and what he stood for. And he would analyze, he would give a knockout Hesped and analyze some major aspect of the person's life or works or personality that was relevant for him. It would be a Musa Shmuz. He would explain what this person stood for in a certain area. And then related to us, one of the major hespedim that stands out in my mind, this was of course after Rabbi's mind, after Rabbi was already in the shiur, was the hesped that he said for Rabbi Avola Soloveitchik, his uncle that was referred to yesterday. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik yesterday alluded very briefly, he was giving Ramazan, I think most of the people didn't get it, he alluded, he said, my father spoke in his hesped about Erisin and Nisun, but he didn't explain what it is. Rav said in the Hesped for Avavla, along with many other beautiful thoughts, he said that the Pasuk tells us, Torah Tzivol on Moshe Morosha Kihilas Yaakov. A common comment, Al Tikri Morosha El Amu Urosa, that the Torah is like a Naira HaMorosa to all of Bnei Yisrael. So Rav Soloveitchik said, but there are two levels in marriage. There's Erisin and there's Nisuin. Nisuin is when the woman moves in and she lives with her husband. So Rav Soloveitchik said, the Torah is like an Arusa to the Hamaynam. Everybody has a chelik with the Torah. But in order to be a level of Nisuin, that's only by great, outstanding, unusual Talmid HaChamim. What is accomplished by Nisuin? So he said, Al Tidin, Aloch, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin. In the third paragraph, in the Sugya of Kroivim, Sugim Leidu, so the Gemara has the principle that Ishtar Kibbutz on Baal Ki Ishtar. That not only am I Posel Eidus to my wife, I'm Posel Eidus to my wife's brother, to all of my wife's relatives, and so on. So that principle only begins to apply after Nisuin. During Erisin, the Gemara says that principle does not apply, because Ishtar Kigufa is only after Nisuin. So Rav Soloveitchik explained how it relates to Torah, that when a person is married, let's say, for several years, so the couple gets to know each other so well, the husband already knows his wife so well, the wife knows the husband, that they don't even have to communicate. When they're thinking about something, they don't even have to talk to each other, they don't have to wink to each other. Each one already knows what the other one would be thinking, what the other one's position would be about this certain matter. So he said that that's what it means, that everybody has erisin with the Torah, but unusual Talmid HaChachamim, outstanding gedolim, like his uncle at that time, he was speaking to you about Rav Elvela, have nisuin with the Torah, and they have an intuition, that when you'll ask them a shaila, they can tell you based on their intuition what the halacha is. That's Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was alluding to yesterday, when he mentioned that there are some people have erisin, some have nisuin, and his father, Zechon Lebracha, had nisuin, like he said about his uncle. It's interesting, there is a Rashi on Parshas Tetzaveh, where Rashi is commenting on the Big Day Kuhuna. And it's a little unclear exactly what the Big Day Kuhuna looked like. So Rashi writes in one place, believe me, Imali, and I have the sense, I have the feeling, that it means like this, and he starts describing what it is. So one of the Talmid HaChachamim from New York City, the way he read it, Rav Gershon Zaks, once commented Al Derech HaLotza a little bit. He said, how can Rashi make such a comment, believe me, Imali? What do you mean my heart tells me? Doesn't it say in the Kriya Shema V'lois HaSurah HaVeh? Are you permitted to follow your heart? The simple meaning is not a kash. The simple meaning is you're not permitted to follow your heart to do some lustful act. But if you follow your heart as far as interpreting pshat in the pasuk, so that's not the violation of the pasuk. But Al Derech HaLotza, he asked this kash. So he said, the answer is, Rav Gershon said, the answer is, when a person fulfills the pasuk in Mishlei Kosvim Aluach Libecho, when he engraves, he has learned so much Torah that he has engraved it on his heart, but then if he follows his heart, then it's okay. Then Levi Arbeli is okay. Then there's no violation of Lus and Surah Rehavah. This is what Rav Soloveitchik was depicting, as in his mind was Nisun, that great, unusual Talmid HaChachamim can feel an intuition as to what the halacha should be. They don't have to look through the sugya. I remember a few years ago, the Rav was already not well. So one of the Rabbonim who always used to consult the Rav in Shiloh called me up on the telephone. And he asked me, what do I think about a certain din? So I said, I'll have to look it up. So he said, but what's your gut reaction? So I said, I have no gut reaction, I have to look it up. Said, but what do you say off here? He kept on asking. I said, I don't say anything, I don't know, I have to look it up. Well, come on, the Rav always used to say his gut reaction. Not the Rav. Then I told him over this book. The Rav had an intuition, and the Rav Taka said like that. The Rav once mentioned in Shir that great Goyim, when they would be consult him, and he would be asked a shaila, he wouldn't first look through the sugyas and then be mevarach the halacha and then come to the conclusion what the din is. They would have an intuitive feeling as to what the din is. Then they would look through the sugyas to see whether their intuition was correct or not, just to support their intuition. Not that they would go through mechadash without any negias at all. They had made up their minds in advance. There's a famous story about the Chassam Sofer like that. The Chassam Sofer used to write his shuvahs very quickly between Mincha and Maariv. He was in a rush. And he would leave the tshuvas on the desk, and he would have his son, the Ksav Sofer, who was single at that time, have his son look over the tshuvas, and then he would send it out in the mail. He knew who was took, he would send it in the mail. And whenever the Ksav Sofer wasn't so convinced that this tshuva should be sent out in the mail, so he would leave it there. He wouldn't tell his father, I don't like your tshuva, he'd just leave it there, he wouldn't mail it out. So there was one tshuva that the Ksav Sofer wrote, and sitting there for 2 weeks. The Ksav Sofer understood in 2 weeks, the son of Ray could have gone through the tshuva. So he asked him, why didn't you mail out the tshuva? So he said, the one who asked the shayla is Dorim Gadol Miyoy. So you write him, and he understood it's Dorim Lakan Lakan. So you write him a tshuva, and you give him a shvach raya from the Gemara. He can dig himself with the raya. It's not such a good raya. So the Sansofer responded, this is the way they write over the story. Sansofer responded, that as far as I'm concerned, my instinctive, intuitive reaction, the muskel rishon is the main thing. His muskel rishon was one way. Get the raya, mehechetaisa, yeah raya, no raya, the ikir is my muskel rishon. It doesn't matter whether the raya is good or not. As long as they're no stiris, libi ermali, that was the main thing. In fact, years ago the yeshiva had a practice that there used to be a goyro. The old timers will remember that those students who were zeichet to get smicha would have to be in a lottery to determine who's going to be mechubed with serving in the army as a chaplain. The yeshiva insisted that we should have one of that chaplain. We don't have it anymore now. So they used to draw lots, and whoever got, I read about high numbers, low numbers, whatever it was, had to go to become a chaplain in the army. So 1 year the students made a whole revolution, they refused to go. So Dr. Belton said, we have a psak, we have a written shuvah from Rav Soloveitchik, that they have a right to draft us in the army. So one of the students, the president of the SOY, was a takif at that time. He said he wants to see the children. If he doesn't see the children, we're going to riot, we're not going to give it. So Dr. Belton had no prayer. He had to give in, he gave the boy the tshuva on the condition, number one, that he gives it back tomorrow morning, number two, he doesn't make any copies. So, number one, the student made a copy right away that night, made many copies. I remember I was in the dormitory upstairs, and he showed me the copy, showing everybody the copy, and then he gave it back to Dr. Balkan, of course, the other condition was fulfilled, gave it back the next day to Dr. Balkan. Why not? So that's how the tshuva, it was a tshuva in English, typed by Rav Soloveitchik, dear Dr. Balkan, it started off, and Rav Soloveitchik's stationery. He starts writing up the shaila. The shaila was not whether the yeshiva can draft the students into the chaplaincy, whether the students permitted to volunteer, but in Gansan and on the shaila, whether you're allowed to volunteer to the chaplaincy. Hayyais that you know that you may have to violate machalos asurus, they may have to violate Shabbos. What's the din? What's the issue of machnasat for the matzav shal tchias isur? He goes to the balamon and rabban, and he comes out why he thinks that it's moving. Okay. But in the beginning of the tshuva, he writes this klal. He writes this in the beginning of the tshuva in English. That by he has a tradition that by great goyim and great talmid chachamim they pasken based on their intuition, and then they check through the sources to see that they're into substantiate that intuition. And he writes that his intuition in this situation is that one is permitted to volunteer for the chaplaincy. He's going to proceed to show that his intuition is correct. It's not that he went through the sources and after figuring everything out that he came to the conclusion based on his libi oimali he felt that that was so. This was true by the Rav. He always had quite an intuition. And most people don't have such ability to have such an intuition. I remember the outstanding hesped that Rav Soloveitchik said to Rabbi Sheshatskis. People were speaking about it for weeks and weeks afterwards. The way he commented on the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Avodah, the Gemara comments, what does the Rabbi Shalom do all day? What does it say to Hayyai? So the Gemara says, during this hour he does 9 to 10, he does this, and 10 to 11, he does that. The Gemara says, there's 1 hour in the day when the Rabbanu Shalom plays with the Levyoskin. What does that mean? He plays with the Levyoskin. So he gave an interpretation, and that I got it, that it means that the Rabbanu Shalom doesn't take the world so seriously. You don't have to take everything so seriously. So he was speaking about the Rav Moshe Shatzkis, that whenever he, the Rav, had some aggravation, someone had insulted him, or some politics or something, would be aggravated, so he would go with the speaker of Moshe Shatzkis and he would complain, Halamai, this one bothered me, this one said this, this one said this. So Moshe Shatzkis would always say, get. It shouldn't take it to heart. So he was stressing this, get. It should take. So for weeks people would, and he was the Rebbe, stressing how important this madrega is, this milah, such tremendous milah to say, eh, get. So for weeks everybody was walking around and shooting each other, eh, get. They were chasming over the whole hesped in the one crest. For weeks people were chasming over. I remember the Rav said an unusual hesped the Din Zar, Olam Hashem, who died in this place, Medrash, in front of everybody. It was a Chagas Micha. And he had, I guess, a heart attack, whatever, and he was embarrassed to take his... He was speaking. He was embarrassed to take his nitroglycerin pill. He was embarrassed to stop. So he finished his talk, and he sat down on the beam over there. And then he slouched over with his hand in his pocket. He died trying to get the pill. He died in front of everybody. And the next day, there was a Levaya here in the Yeshiva. So I remember also, Rachik said at that time, started off, the Shem Shem Eftar Min HaMesim, Kachin Eftar Min HaSabadonim, you have to tell the truth. So he developed, every Hesped he said was a Nakad Hesped. He would develop a theme with a Mokka from the Gemara, and a Chazal, and a Maimer, and an Agadat, and a interpretation, and apply to this person. So he said at that time, there's a Pasuk in the Nechemya Perekhes, where it says that they started the second Beis HaMikdash, was built in the days of Ezra Nechemya, and they opened up the Holy Temple for the High Holidays, and they opened up on Rosh Hashanah. And then when they were laying Kriyas HaTera, Ezra Soifer got the first Aliyah, he was a Kohen. Got the first Aliyah, they said, Baruch HaSav Shem HaMavayrach, and everybody said, Baruch HaSav Shem HaMavayrach, everybody was paying attention to the Kriyas HaTera, it says. And then they were laying Kriyas HaTera, and they laying the Feirash with Sum Seichel. And the Pasuk says that it was a Bima Shaleitz, there was a wooden platform in the Azore where the Balkari was laying, and when Ezra got the Aliyah, he was standing on top of that platform. And there were about 12 people standing on the platform, and the Pasuk in the Hemi lists off all of the names. So the Ralbag, in his commentary, on the bottom of the page in the Mikros, in the regular standard Tanakh, has a comment. Why did they need so many people? Said, somebody got boim, they need somebody got boim to stand on top of the Bima Shaleitz. So the Ralbag has a novel interpretation. They needed a minion on the platform because you can't be mitzvah the people on the floor and on the platform. So Lechik suggested a different shot. Because the Gemara in the Zohar on Daflam and Ches comments on the Hemshech HaPsukim there, that it says Vayavino Bamikro, they were laying with Gishmak, and they were laying with Feiresh with Sum Seichel. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Vayavino Bamikro, they were laying with Tro, and they were laying based on the Kriyak Siv. They were careful to lay the Kriyak Siv. So Rav Soloveitchik said, Mestome, what happened was that Ezra was laying according to the tradition, according to the Kriy, but the Ksiv was different. So he told all the 12 people on the Bima, take a look inside. You see the Ksiv? I'm not going to read what it says. I'm going to say, according to the tradition, what the Kriy is. When you have a Kriy Ksiv, you have to point out that this is the Ksiv, and we're not going to lay like that. So he was being marach about that a little bit, and then he said that when we try to assess the people, so very often there's a Kriy and there's a Ksiv. There's what it appears to be, and then there's what it really is. The Kriy is what it appears to be. And the Ksiv is what it really is. When you look inside, what is it in the Toch Toch, or Shal HaPerson, Shal HaAdam, what is it really? So he spoke about the Din Zar Olam HaShalom, that he appeared to be A, B, C, D, different things, and he showed the way it wasn't really so, that the Din Zar wasn't all of those things. People thought that he was a Tuffy, and then different Midas. Rav Soloveitchik explained that he knew Rav Shmuel Leib Zar very well, and he was explaining what the Ksiv was. This was certainly so regarding Rav Soloveitchik himself. There were many things that people must misunderstood about the Rav. I remember when I first started in the Shia, so the Rav used to travel in from Boston every Tuesday morning, and he would give a Shia for a group of about 30 students, college students, for about 2 hours, and then he would, that would be the end of that Shia, then he would give another Shia, back to back, give another Shia 2 hours to another group of Smicha students, 4 hours in a row. And then he would give the Shira Maria at night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday morning, right, there would be two shiurim, one for the Smicha students, one for the college students, one for the Smicha students, then he'd go back to Boston. This would go on every week. And the Rav mentioned once to Maria that in the earlier years, when he used to travel in from Boston, he used to say Tfilas HaDerech, and in the later years, when he used to go by plane, he got so used to it already, so he wasn't nervous at all, so then he stopped saying the Tfilas HaDerech. He thought that the Din of Tfilas HaDerech is only when one is a little nervous about it. So very often, the Rav wouldn't always come in on a Tuesday morning. Sometimes he would come in on a Monday morning. Sometimes he would come in on a Thursday morning. So very often he would miss the Tefillah B'Tzibah, but he would miss Kriyas HaTorah. And he would come to the Shia. He would want to make a minion. So he would always ask after the second Shia, is there anybody here who missed Kriyas HaTorah? So there would always be more than enough people to raise their hand. And then he said, okay, we're going to daven mincha in the Beis Medrash. The Shia would be over there in that room on the side, and he would walk into the Beis Medrash. So he would say Ashrei, and the high school students would be walking by, high school college students would be walking by north. We would say Ashrei, then the Chazan would say Chatzikar, then he would take out a Sefer Torah like on a tiny steeper, take out a Sefer Torah, and lay what you're supposed to lay in the morning, Monday or Thursday morning. Then he would put back the Sefer Torah, they would say Chatzikar, and then they would daven, mincha. So the people would pass by in the halls, they would think, this be a risk of Shita. Chamish, you gotta link Kriyas HaTorah to Mincha. Never heard it, didn't know that Shulchan Aruch doesn't say, you know, they weren't so familiar with the Shulchan. Everything must be a brisket shita. Of course, there wasn't a brisket shita. There was a little brisket shita here, that the Rav said that Rav Chaim's opinion was that Kriyas HaTorah is a Chayvus HaYochid, not merely a Chayvus HaTzibur. And if a yochid missed Kriyas HaTorah, so he should try to scrounge together and in order to hear Kriyas HaTorah even. And Rav Chaim held that one can lay even late in the afternoon. There is some poskim hold, the minority of the poskim hold that Kriyas HaTorah Shein Hamisha has to be davka in the morning before Chatzah, during his manat filo shachris, in conjunction with davening shachris. And the Rav poskim hold on and not so, that one can even lay Kriyas HaTorah in the afternoon. This was in fact Rav Chaim's practice. When Rav Chaim would be traveling, this is recorded in other places. A lot of times the Rav used to tell us stories, and I used to wonder, is this really true? This is a little too much to be true. And then 30 years later, I saw it in print in someone else's sefer, the name of Rav Elzel, or someone else wrote a name of Rav Chaim, not from the family. It's not that they're quoting Rav Soloveitchik. I didn't have a munas chacham. The Rav used to give sometimes hanhoges and biurim and interpretations, and I was wondering, is this really the pshat? And years later, I found that's the way a lot of Gdolim said that. He wasn't the only one. That's they quote Rav Chaim said that, Rav Dovla, other Litvish Gedolim. He wasn't the only one. So this also, this state defense, this was Rav Chaim's practice. So a lot of people misunderstood all the time. They thought it must be a brisk shita that you learn Kriyas HaTorah de Mincha. I remember on the yard side once, the Rav used to daven parnomes. On the yard side, he would daven in Chazoros HaShatz out loud Mincha. And then he would say Sim Shalom. What did he say Sim Shalom? Oh, so a whole group of boys figured out Aganse Torah, Aganse Pshat. So what? When there's a tiny sibur, everybody says Sim Shalom, because you say Birchat Kahan to Mincha. Zed and Fundan, that when a person, and the Rav was fasting, we all know the Rav was fasting on his yard side, so you see that the Rav holds, the Rav sheeta, the Rav holds, that the Chazan says Sim Shalom, even when it's a tiny siyachid. So remember, a group of boys said this. I said, you guys are crazy. There is no such thing. He said, no, they have. I said, it's wrong. What? Ask the Rav. No! Obviously. So someone finally asked the Rav. The Rav explained, he says Sim Shalom to Marev also, his dam is no Sacharin. He always says Sim Shalom. He's not going to go check, but he was davening in the side room. So he has to go make a cheshbon. How many people daven Nusach Ari? How many people daven Nusach Ashkenaz? So he davened his Nusach. He said, Sim Shalom. There are many people that misunderstand. Many practices that the Rav has totally misunderstood. And many things. So, I mean, these are in a certain sense silly. In Shulchan Aruch, there's an issue when the Chazan finishes davening the Shmoneh Esrei, and he says, you should say Yilu Ratzon in Retreat. Should he step back to say Yosef Shalom and Raimov on that? So the Poskim say that if he's going to say Kaddish right away, then he can rely on stepping back to Shalom and Ramadi at the Kaddish. But if he's going to say Tachnun, so then the Mogen Avraham quotes from the Poskim that the proper practice is that the Chazan should step back 3 steps and say Yosef Shalom and Ramadi softly before he gets to say Kaddish. Before he gets to say Tachnun, he shouldn't rely on the stepping back after the Kaddish. So that's what the Rav used to do when he used to daven Parnom and when he had Yartzeit, Shachris and Minche. So a lot of the boys didn't know that this is discussed in Shulchan Aruch. But the Rav has a new thing, so they would do the same practice on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Shabbos and Yom Tov, you don't say Tachnun. So there's no machlekes over there. Everybody agrees that the Chazan should rely on the stepping back by Yosef Shalom and Raimov. There's no machlekes over there. So finally, we convinced some of these Chachamim to ask the Rav. So the Rav said, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. They just, when you say Tachnun, then you shouldn't rely. The Chazan shouldn't rely on the stepping back. But these are really really trivial. The Gemara in the first pair of Nechulim comments. Gemara says that Rebbe Hita Beit Shan, based on the testimony of Rebbe Shur Ben Zoruz, the brother-in-law of Rebbe Meir, that he said that Rebbe Meir, Ochal Allah Shal Yerek, without being Marcus Trumus and Maisus, so it's a raya, that the parts of Beit Shan were chutzlot, they were never niskatshu b'kedusha shniya. So the Gemara says, and how do you know that that's the Maisa? How do you know that that's the reason why? Because it was chutzlot. Maybe this, and maybe that, and maybe he was Marfish Belev, and maybe he was Nosan Eni Mitzad Zedok of the Tzadach. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Chazim Angar Rabbi Komatzer Alev, Rabbi Shur Ben Zor, this is an Adam Godel, he's telling you over. He saw a story of Rabbi Meir, and he understood, he knew how to interpret it. So you see from the Gemara that if you have a Gavar Rabbi telling over a Maiser Rab, then you assume that he interpreted properly. But some people see an Adam Godel do something, it doesn't necessarily mean that they understood properly. It may be that there are 99 points of information that are missing, they simply misunderstood. There were more serious things that the Rav was sorely misunderstood. There was a story, the Rav used to tell very ridiculous stories all the time. He used to tell a lot of stories in connection, very often in connection with the halachas. So stories always helped us remember the halachas. The fascinating stories that we would remember after. So we would remember what the psaka was, what the tshuva was, what the gemara was. And he would tell over stories and indicated hashkofa. So he once told over a story, more often, pretty often he told over the story about the Shachasarya, that in the days of the Shachasarya, the practice was the way it's described in the Shulchan Aruch, that when it comes to Kaddish, only one person says the Kaddish. It was a recent innovation that everybody says Kaddish at the same time. So there are rules and regulations, so who has the right to say the one Kaddish? So if one is Shloshim, and one is Shiva, and a father, and a brother, and an uncle, and if he's based Kaddish, and he's not here, is he a member, is he not a member, how long did he live in the community, all kinds of rules. So once in the Shachasarya's community, there was an Asik who's going to say Kaddish, so the Shachasarya says, they should barb girdle, they should draw lines. So some of the Balabatim were learned people, so they said, Rebbe, but the Magen Avraham has rules and regulations, what do you mean barb girdle? Whereupon the Shachasarya responded, and how do you think the Magen Avraham came to his conclusion? He also drew lots. So we're going to figure it out the same way the Magen Avraham did. So Rav Soloveitchik would tell over this story in certain instances when people would ask him, what's the halacha in a certain case? So he would say, Varf Goyro. And then they would wonder, Varf Goyro? Listen, what's the halacha? So he would tell over the story from the Shachasarya, and he thought that they understood what he was driving at, that there are certain matters that are simply non-halachic. Okay? Just a silly Muslim out of there, you come to a community and they have red lights and green lights, and you don't know what's the minigam lokum. Red light means go, or red light means stop. So barf girl, and make up your mind whether red light means go or red light means stop. It's not a halachic issue. It's an arbitrary thing. You have to decide one way or the other. So whenever it's a non halachic issue, say a barf girl. So Rav Soloveitchik would say this very often, he would tell over the story. And many of the people that he told it to totally misunderstood what he said. They would get furious. What do you mean barf girl? I guess what's the halacha? That's exactly what he answered. There is no halacha. The halacha doesn't have something to... What kind of a shirt should you buy? Should you buy a striped shirt or white on white or white? So he would say, barf girl. It's not a halachic issue. Now he asked me a shayla and din. So barf girl. So people misunderstood the rub. I heard people saying, Rav Soloveitchik said that all the Magen Avraham's decisions on Shulchan Aruch were based on the fact that he just drew lines. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. So why did he break his head all the time to figure out Pshat in the Magen Avraham? Why did he break his head to figure out all he spent Shiv and Ikiyim to figure out Pshat and Ashver, Shach and Yeredei and Ashver and Magen Avraham? That's not what he said. He was talking to people who didn't even understand his Sichas Chulin. What he meant to say was that it's a non-halachic issue. So there is no halacha, there is no psaka. So do whatever you want. Several years ago, I was sitting in the Pidyon HaBen next to Professor Tversky, and he told me that he asked me if we can get a student from the Kollel to teach Gemara in Maimonides School. They had difficulties getting a good rabbi. So I said, to tell you the truth, I spoke to a few people already. The people from the yeshiva had already asked me. I spoke to some of the boys in the Kollel. They don't want to go because it's co-ed. So he tells me, oh, he understands that. And he tells me that he really misunderstood. He thought that he was close to his father-in-law, to the Rav, all these years. He thought he understood it in the Rav's position. And he came to the realization that he didn't understand it. His father-in-law had told him just a year or two before that now that I'm getting old, he thinks that it's time that they should separate the classes in Maimonides, that as long as he was healthy and able to look around in the school, he felt that his supervision was sufficient to watch over the fact that it's co-ed, and now that he's old, he thinks that they should separate the clip. So Dr. Dvorsky told me, I should get a good bacha, I should get a good fellow from the Kollel, and tell him that we plan to separate the clip. And tell him, that's what I told the fellow, and they got a good boy. I don't know, I think they still didn't separate the classes. That's their problem. This is what Dr. Tversky told me. This is already a major issue. We're not talking about the Kriyas HaTorah and Nimcha. We're not talking about Oysa Shalom and Reino. This is a more important issue. I remember the first year I was in Rav Soloveitchik's shiur. There was a story, I was pretty young, I was only 16 then, I was still in high school, and there was a story going around. So I heard the stories also, there was a story going around, and I never ascertained it until yesterday. Yesterday I was sitting on the bima, so I had heard over 35 years ago who the Bala Maisa was. So I spoke to him yesterday, and I asked, did he ever hear this story? So he said, tell me, yeah, he was the Bala Maisa, and he told me over the Maisa Shohai. He said that when he was in the Rav Shir, he was pretty close to the Rav. He was a very bright student. He was pretty close to the Rav. And he asked him, when you go out with girls, that you have to be medaktik to see to it that the girl wants to cover her hair. So Rav Soloveitchik told him, are you going out already? Is it just theoretical? Or is it halacha l'maisa? He said, no, I didn't start going out yet. So the Rav said, when it will be halacha l'maisa, then you'll ask me. So he didn't know what the Rav was so snappy about. He said, okay. He waited 3/4 of a year, whatever, till the next year, started going out. Then he came back to the Rav. He tells the Rav. He started to go out. And I asked the Shadon last year whether married, whether one should be makbid about insisting that the girl should cover her hair. So Rav Soloveitchik told him, absolutely, b'alocha z'alocha, and don't ask me akashif in the fact that there are so many choshev rabbonim whose wives don't cover their hair. B'alocha z'alocha, and what it says in the Orach HaShpipul, b'alozach, the Orach HaShulchan, it's narishkeit, it's gone to table. That's not what it says in the Orach HaShulchan. I remember that story, and that's what I asked the Bala Maisi yesterday, and he told me there were many things. There were many things that the Rav simply misunderstood. People misunderstood the Rav in a tremendous way. They had the impression as if the Rav was interested in changing everything. We're changing over the whole mode of religious observance. My impression was not so at all. The Rav, in one of the every 3 years there used to be a Chag HaSmicha. The Rav used to give a major address in the auditorium on the occasion of the Chag HaSmicha. And I remember on one occasion he was giving a drush and it was getting on. It was long. He used to speak to barichas. On one occasion I remember that he used to be a Yiddish all the time. He used to say, Rabbi, it's only once every 3 years you can sit and listen. You're not going to have to suffer for another 3 years. Okay. I remember on one occasion he used to give major addresses on the occasion of the Chag HaSmicha. I remember on one occasion he was speaking, he was giving an azhara to the young mismachim that they shouldn't rush to change the halacha when science comes up with some new fact. He says, Allah, the Torah is going to be with us for a long time to come. And the scientists may change their mind in a year or two. So don't be so hasty to change the Allah. He was very wary of changing any halacha. So I remember, in fact, when the Rav delivered the talk called Dodi Dofek, I have to check exactly what year that was, I don't remember. I remember he was banging on the shtender. Called Dodi Dofek. He would knock every 10 minutes when he had another knock. So he would give in the presentation, he would give very dramatic presentation. Called Dodi Dofek. All the opportunities that the Rebbe Shlom gave to Knesset Yisrael to come back there. He's thrown and so on. So the good part of the drosha was published, but not everything was published. It stands out pretty sharply in my mind that part of the drasha was that Rav Soloveitchik was discussing the observance of Yom HaTzmut, Yom HaTzmut. So he said he understands that in Eretz Yisrael the practice is that they take haircuts and they shtel chuppas, they shtel chasanis, and Yom HaTzmut, in fact he didn't mention it at that occasion, but they say, they have in the books, that all the boys in America Zarab, for most of the Yeshiva and so, they don't shave during Sfirah. When it comes to Yom HaTzmut, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook insisted that everybody has to shave, and whoever didn't shave, and he would see them, he would say, Akar Aspon of Ansabah, you can tell on your face that you don't believe in Yad Hashem, you don't believe in the Rabban Shalom, Nisim, and Tzmuiz, and it's terrible. You have to shave on Yom HaTzmut. So Ethicon. So I remember Rav Soloveitchik had this side comment that wasn't, I don't think it was part of the major, it wasn't the major point in the address. He developed the theme at that time that we have beautiful, wonderful menhagim, we shouldn't think like them. So I was very young at that time, but I seem to recall that he said something that ran roughly as follows, that before every yontif, when we have a simcha, on yontif, simchas yontif, we try to make a cheshben anefesh and have a serious observance in advance to make sure that the simcha should be observed properly. So he said, before Purim, so you have Tainus Esther, before Pesach, you have Tainus Pyrus. Before Rosh Hashanah you have Slichas, many fast on Rosh Hashanah. Before Sukkot you have Yom Kippur. Before Shavuot you have the whole period of Sfirah. And he said on other occasions that according to the Zohar, the period of Sfirah is a period of Avelus Min HaTorah. It has nothing to do with the fact that Rabbi Akiva died. The function of the Sfirah is of Tahareh and Mitzli Paseinu, Mitzul Maseinu. It's a time to de-entire ourselves. And all Arichas, one was in a state of Tum, is in a semi-state of Avelus. He gave a whole Arichas Dorim on that. Lifnei Hashem. Simcha is Lifnei Hashem, and Avelus is not Lifnei Hashem. Simcha and Avelus is tied to the Sass. One is Tami, is not forbidden to enter the Beis Hamikdash. So obviously it's like Avelus in the sense that he's not Lifnei Hashem. He's staying away from Hashem. So he said he thinks that it's a beautiful minig, like all the Yiddish minhagim, beautiful minhagim, and he doesn't see why it's necessary for the purpose of observing Yom HaTzmut to violate the minhagim of Sfirah. In fact, I don't think his practice was to say halal on Yom HaTzmut when he used to daven with the talis over his head. So he was davening in the minyan, so they said halal, so he would just, I understand that he didn't say halal, he would just stay in the minyan. On one occasion when he was davening across the street in the dormitory, so the students got a little carried away, they had one of the forms of observing Yom HaTzmut is to have a haftarah. I assume without brothers. And Yom HaTzmut. So when they wanted to lay in Haftarah, so Rav Soloveitchik walked out. And he walked out in the Haftarah. He was so angry, I wasn't in shir at that time already. I was saying my own shir. But that day he was so angry about the fact that the students had been so carried away with their observance of Yom HaTzimut. So he started to pour his heart out. Instead of giving the regular shir, he was pouring his heart out about the fact, yeah, we believe in religious Zionism, wonderful, we believe the Medina is a wonderful thing, but still you don't go crazy, you don't introduce all of the observances from, you don't say lichten, you don't read the Megillah, you don't blow shofar, you don't kill shofar from Rosh Hashanah, Chanukah candles for Chanukah, Kriyas HaMegillah from Megillah. What do you mix everything in tzusammen? Everything? So Rabbi Finkelstein, after they heard that the Rav had exploded, they got so angry, so Rabbi Finkelstein came to the Rav. And then yes, both here in the high school we have a minion, and we want to know, we want to say how. So does he disapprove of it? And if he doesn't disapprove, what would he recommend? So Rabbi Finkelstein, the Rav thought about it for a while, and he said, if you want to say how, he recommends that you say chasi how to believe bracha after the shir shalom. Okay, you can ding them. People can ding them. But that's what he said. He personally, I think, said that he didn't say any how. But this is what he recommended for those who do want to say how. He wasn't so keen on changing anything. He felt that if you're going to start introducing changes, that the Hamoinam won't understand why can't you change Shabbos and Kashrus and Taurus and Mishpacha also. After all, if you're updating our laws, so let's change everything. He was very opposed until I used to daven all the time by Balabatim. I never davened in Yeshiva until later years. I said, Balabatim? Which shul by Balabatim says all the piyutim? In my shul by daven, they never said all the piyutim. On Yom Kippur, they skipped. We made a kritz haderech. The first time I ever davened by Balabatim, he said everything was in Boston. The Rav said every piyut in the book. And then on Tisha B'Av, he said every kin in the book. In my shul by the Balabatim, we didn't say all the kinnas. Whoever said all the kinnas? You say the major kinnas that are written in a Hebrew that the people stand the chance of pronouncing and understanding. The kinnas he can't even pronounce, he can't even understand. The kurtz to use them in the kinnas that even Ezra makes fun of them. Kahalas. What's right? We didn't say those. The Rav insisted no, and he said one, I remember he said once to Maria, the shir for the Balabatim, that he consulted his father about this. And his father said, you better not leave anything out. If you leave one thing out, the Balabatim's perception will be that you can change and you can do and you can snip and do whatever you want. And then they want to know, why don't we do away with this? Let's leave out Yusuf and let's leave out Kir Shaykh and let's leave out the other thing. Let's change everything. I was told, I didn't hear this personally, I was told that the Rav was opposed to Rabbonim holding a drush in the middle of the chuppah. If they want to speak, they should speak before the chuppah. Even though I thought that I was a big genius and I thought that I outsmarted the Rav and I had a whole taina and shir when I learned with the Talmidim, I explained why that's the best place to hold the drush is in the middle of the chuppah because in the days of the Goy, in the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Tanakh, they used to have Eris, and then have Nisuin a year later. And then in the days of the Goyim, in the days of the Rishonim, is when they had the one stomach to the other. They had the Eris in, and then the Yisuin immediately following. So they have those Maimon, he quotes in the name of Rabbi Tam and Rashi, that they introduced the Kriya Satsuka to have a Hafsoka, that it should look funny. Why are you saying Bar Piagofen? You just said Bar Piagofen. It's Mana Tanakh, it's Mana Gemara that said Bar Piagofen on Kos Erisin. Then a year later, we said Bar Piagofen on the Kos Nisuma. Once you move up the Nisuma to be immediately following the Erisin, so the second Bar Piagofen has no room. So that's what Agos Maimony quotes, that they introduced the Kriya Saksuba for a half token. I guess the Kriya Saksuba is pretty fair. It means that you should read the Ksuba slowly. Anybody who remembers Bera Blazer Silva, the Chemal Rabbi used to read the Ksuba. He would give a dramatic presentation of the Ksuba. He would read slowly and wait, and if anyone would be whispering, he would wait till they would stop whispering. So that's a half token. I thought if the rabbi is going to hold the drosha, what better place is it to hold that longer drosha and the chazan should sing shiralas over there? All the hafsoka should be in the middle where the rishonim said you got to make a hafsoka. So I thought I was so smart, but then I understood. And then they told me, Rav Soloveitchik said, no, you can't do it in the middle. I said, what do you mean you can't do it in the middle? Abi Rabbi, that's what the rishonim said. So I think what he probably meant was, I don't think he meant Abi Rabbi. He meant, like he said from his father, that where Rabbanim have to be careful not to introduce any shinuyim because the perception on the part of the Balabatim will be that we have the right to change everything, just ceremony, and you can change the ceremonies at will, and then the people will want us to change everything else also. Other Rabbi, the Rav, was very insistent on retaining old minhagim, even those that have been neglected already for hundreds of years. Like in Shulchan Aruch, I don't know if it's a minigadin, whatever, that on a tiny tzibur, the Mechaber quotes from the Mechilta, on a tiny tzibur, you have to have two people standing next to the chazan doing chazaras hashas. So the Magen Avraham says that our practice is not on Yom Kippur, it's a tiny tzibur, ain't tiny tzibur b'bavel, except for Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, the Mechaber writes that you have to have two people standing next to the chazan doing the tefillah, doing chazaras hashas. So the Magen Avraham says our practice is not, so we only have the two people standing next to the chazan during Kol Nidre, because that's like our Asaras and Dorim. And then during the Nila, because Nila is a tefillah satayis. Nila is a tefillah that's only recited, has nothing to do with Yom Kippur. Nila is recited in every time. So that's a tefillah satayis. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that we should go back to the old minhagim, even though it hasn't been observed for so many years. And he insisted, and Boston had it like that, and they introduced it here in Yeshiva also, that they have two people sitting next to the chazan during the Hazaras Hashan, by Shachris, by Musas, and by Minche as well. Or in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam quotes the minhag that by waiting the Rabbanon, so the people, everybody is bowed down from the beginning to the end. And then the later Achrayim say that our meaning is not say just bowed down at the beginning and the end, and others say only the beginning. A discussion shot in the Gemara. So even though that's not the common practice, Rav Soloveitchik used to observe the practice of bowing down for the whole Moed from the beginning to the end, like the old minhag that was recorded in the Ramah. Or the Ramah has another minhag that the Mishnah Brura says has already been neglected, that when a person gets an aliyah, so he shouldn't look into the Sefer Torah, lest people will think Brachas Tzuvos Batera. The Gemara Megillah has such a concern. But one time it says you have to close the Sefer Torah in order that no one should think that you're reading the Brachas from the Sefer Torah. We don't pass them like that time. We pass them that there's nothing to worry about. So the Ramah says, well, Nikar Adi, you don't have to, but it's proper, yes, to worry about it. So therefore you should turn to the side, and instead of turning to this side, you should turn to that side. Shaktik has a whole meaning. And then the Mishnah Brura says the meaning is not so. You just leave the Sefer Torah open, and you close your eyes. So the Rav used to have the practice, and all those who saw the Rav Maimonides followed that. Those in Yeshiva, many had that practice. To turn to the left side, he liked to revert back to old minhagim. In fact, he told us that in the early years, when he was first married, he said that later he explained why he changed his minhag. He said in the early years, when he was first married, he had the practice to follow the minhag of the Balei HaTosfos, that they would daven mincha first and then have the wife ben shlis to be choshesh for the shitas bahag. But the Baha'i said that our locus neiris, like the Balabasta, is the Kabbalist that said, Shabbat Balkocha for all of their bayis. If the Balabasta is not a bench list, then you can't daven mincha, because once you're in the Kabbal Shabbat, once it's the Tosefet Shabbos, you're not permitted to daven tefillas kol. So the practice of the Balei HaTosfos was, I think the Magen Avraham quotes it from the Rishonim, that they would daven mincha in shul, and then they would send their little boys home to tell their mothers that they should bench list. He said that was his friend. He used to daven mincha the Yechidus before his wife would bench list. And in later years, he changed that practice. He had a lot of issues where he would revert back to old minhagim. In fact, I remember that he mentioned that usually on Erev Pesach, when you're holding by, when the rabbi is just about to sell the chametz, some balabas calls up the rabbi's list and he says he forgot to fashrag the chametz. He wants the rabbi to sell the chametz for him. Fine. So the din is that you don't have to make a kabbalah kinyan. You don't have to sign a document. If you authorize a shliach about that, that's also sufficient. But the Rambam quotes in Hilchas Mechir, the beginning of Hilchas Mechir, the Rambam writes that there was such a minig, and we still have a minig today to make a Kabbalah's Kinyan when you appoint a Shliach, to make a Kabbalah's Kinyan with the Shliach. The rabbi gives a handkerchief to the Balabot, in exchange for which the Balabot gives the rabbi the koyach to be the Shliach. So if he's calling on the telephone, so he can't do it. So he can't. So the Rav said, no. He thinks he should try to observe the minig, even if he's calling on the telephone. Well, how can you observe the minig? So he had with a Chochma that the Rambam explains in Hilchas Mechir, that what is this meaning all about? It doesn't make any sense. The Rambam is right. That there are certain minyanim where a kinyan is not necessary and it's not even chal. So why do we make a kinyan if it's not even chal, it's not even nitfas in a kinyan? But the Rambam says the purpose of the kinyan is to demonstrate that he's appointed in the shliach, b'leiv sholem, or b'leiv gomer. Just to demonstrate that there's a full gnir itself. And then the Rambam says, l'ficha, what if the person appoints a shliach and he says, b'leiv sholem, ani yaseh dovez, I'm appointing you, b'leiv sholem. Then the Rambam says there's no meaning to the meaning at all. And then it's useless to make a kinyan. There's no need to make a kinyan. So the Rav said, if you have a balabas that calls you up on the telephone and he can't come in person and he wants you to be his shliach, so ask him, are you doing this b'leiv shalem? Are you appointing me with all of your heart? Are you appointing the shliach? And if he says yes, then you yotze the minig. Then you yotze. So he said the Rabbanim should try to be yotze the minig. But the Rambam records an alpha minig to make a kabbalah's kinyan. Even though the balabas is calling on the phone, how can you observe the minig? So he says no, because the Rambam says that that satisfies the minig. Just recalling, I remember the first year that I learned in the Rav Shed, they put up a sign on the bulletin board that the Rav will not come into Seishir until the third week in the term. All the students are expected to prepare till the Rav and Aleph. Everybody else started Shur right away, and the Rav is not going to come until the third week. So I remember when we were learning till the Rav, they told us a story, and then later on I heard that it's like a true story. They told us a story that there was some shul in Boston. There used to be an Orthodox shul that had separate seating with the mechitza. And the Balabatim, the board, had a vote, and they decided to take down the mechitza and have mixed seating. And Rav Soloveitchik was very unhappy about that. So that's how the story goes. He called up Rav Lazer Silver, with whom he was in the court, and he asked Lehibi Maskin to sign on Easter, and they're going to print it in the newspapers. So I remember the Talmidim in the yeshiva said over the Rosh Hashanah, the chairman of the board or the vice president, whoever was, got up in the shul. He said, these old fogies, they're telling us that we have to have this matzitz in the shul. We're not going to listen to these old rabbis. We're going kadima. We're going to be, we're going to go forward and we're going to advance. And we're in the 20th century. We don't live in the ghetto and so on and so forth. And then that was before Slichas, the first night of Slichas. That was the first night before Slichas. And then around 2 o'clock at night, he got a heart attack and he was up. So the Talmidim took it as a mitzvah, that it was a kilvas chacham. So we were petrified. That was before the Rav said the first shiur. We were petrified. This guy has, this man has the power. If he gets angry at us, wow. Imagine to start off the year like that. And I was wondering to myself, what's the matter? All the other rebbes start the first week. Who does this man think that he is? What do you mean we had the sign, Mr. Ravens put up a sign on the bulletin board, all I used to learn over there, that table. So all the students have to prepare till Dabar Rabbi Soloveitcher cannot begin this year until everybody else starts from day number one. Manishtana Rosh Hashiva, then we call it Rosh Hashiva. Then the Rav came in the third week and he understood what? He gave 2 shiurim on Tuesday and Wednesday. He was ready ahead of everybody else. The others said a shiur every day of the week, Sunday through Thursday. And they started the first week and they were ready 2.5 weeks into shiur. And the Rav gave the first shiur on Tuesday. He had already spanned everything. He had already covered all the material. I remember even the first year, one of the first shiurim that we were learning Sanhedrin then, one of the first shiurim on Sanhedrin, the Rav had a big yisoy, which I printed years later, the Kunshas HaSmicha, that there's a dispute between the Rambam and Tosfos, what the nature of the din of smicha is. So his main yisoy was based on the Or Samech, one of the earliest shiurim. He mentioned the Or Samech as a beer on the Rambam, that the Rambam's opinion is that smicha is not a din of bezin, it's rather a din of haruah, a din of psak, and then the Rav expanded upon that. The Rav on many occasions quoted many achronim. Yesterday, Chaim Soloveitcher mentioned that his father in his library didn't have too many svarim. He had a limited library. He clearly had a limited library, that's a fact. But in Europe, he used all of these svarim. The Rav used to mention in the Shiur svarim pashut for the members of his family. He used to mention the Minchas Baruch. Everybody who learned here or there by the Rav remembers the Minchas Baruch. The first year in Hilchas Arubis would be to rip apart what the Minchas Baruch said. Minchas Baruch is always quoted by the disciple. I always quote Minchas Baruch was Baruch Karinka. I think it's from the Beis Aram. The Rav used to mention the Malbusha Yantuk, who was he was a Rav Haslavich. The Lidim Haslavich for a while. He used to mention, in fact, the Rav told over the story the way his father was so eager to buy the Sefer Amudayor that he would put away a few pennies every week until he finally scrounged up, until he finally got enough money to buy the Sefer Amudayor. And he bought it, he enjoyed it so much. So in America, we have money, so I went, but I heard the story, I went right away and I bought the Amudayor. I don't understand why his father liked the Amudayor. I don't understand why he saved so much money, but he said his father could have this pilot. I'm with your Givali, maybe he's also a relative. Rav once came into the shiur when they were saying shiurim on Bava Metzia. So he brought in the notebook of Rav Chaim, so he was reading the notes and he said, Rav Chaim quote the sefer Mayane HaChokhme, he doesn't know what the sefer is. Mayane HaChokhme is a pilpul sefer on Bava Metzia. Rav Blade Mishkar, the one who wrote 150 svarim on every Mitzvah Shabbat Torah, and every topic of the Torah. The Rav once told over a story. It happened that we discussed it last week. The Rav told over a story about the ways of Rabbi Zalkarev said that when he comes to the Olam Emes, he's going to bring the Neder Yehuda to the Torah, but being maxed to him 5 rubles. That the Neder Yehuda writes a tshuva to the Becha David, a Sephardic Rav who is in Constantinople, and he writes, L'chona Rav, Agoyna, Mefursin, Boki, Charev, everything, such fancy titles. So the Rabbi Zalkarev, Rabbi Zalkarev, saw the titles in the Neder Yehuda Sefer. He figured such a great goin, it's kedai to buy a sefer. It cost him 5 rubles and he bought the sefer Divrei Emes. And it's a Sephardic sefer, a topic that's nothing special. The key is nothing special. So he said he's angry at the Neder Yehuda, why he misled him with all the titles. When he comes to the Olam Emes, he's gonna have a tviya on the 5 rubles. So the Rav said that Rav Chaim right away responded to the Rabbi Zalkarev about a certain issue. What's the din of Eidah and Surim in a certain case by Noshim? And he said it's certainly good. Rav Chaim said, oh, look at the Divrei Emes. Obviously, Rav Chaim looked in the Divrei Emes. I never heard of the Divrei Emes until the Rav told the story. Now I see it sells in the store. I still didn't buy a Divrei Emes. but it's in the stores. So obviously, Rav Chaim had all these stores, but he looked in the store. He used to say over. The Rav would quote Kesedah from Eglei Tal. He didn't have it here. When we learned Sanhedrin, he used to quote the Zachsidish Seif on Sanhedrin called Sanhedrin Tano. He used to quote from a lot of stories. He used to quote the Ksais and the Seas from Shtes. He used to quote a lot of stories. In fact, I remember when the Kailo first started. Second Kollel, not from the Europeans in the early 1940s, in more recent years, when they started the Kollel, so I think we started learning at the end of Bava Kama. So I remember one evening the Rav came over and he said, oh, the end of Bava Kamma. He remembers learning Bava Kamma, that part of Bava Kamma. He said, this is the Smetanei of Bava Kamma, the end. But that's the most Gishmaki part. He remembers learning this part of Bava Kamma with his father, with the Yamsha Shloima. I had never seen a Yamsha Shloima. With his father, Yamshon. I remember that time he told his boy, I understand that the Chazon Ish has a say on Bava Kamma. He recommended we should look at the Chazon Ish. And he gave us his explanation why. He said, I don't think he ever met the Chazon Ish. He said that he heard that the Chazon Ish wasn't that much of a Baal Kishon. He wasn't that much of a genius. And whatever, all that he accomplished was through pure Yegiyah, that he worked so hard. And he mastered Kala Terapuva. He mastered so much. Everything he has on Zroyan, Kutchim, Taris, Nashim, Zikin, everything. He made a Z and he has what to say, comments, very penetrative comments on everything. And everything that he accomplished was through Yegiyah. So he said, that's Kedai, boys, you understand the Sefer from Chazon Ish. We should get the Chazon Ish and say, we never got the Chazon Ish. But that's what he recommended. He would encourage us. I remember originally when they formed the Kolo, the Rav thought that part of the Sidra HaKolo should be Tanya and the Ramban Al HaTorah. Every week we should learn the Ramban Al HaTorah. The Gemara in Erevin has a certain sharp comment, a certain critique regarding Talmidei Chachamim who learn without a nigud. Kol Hashana V'Lo Zimra, all of our Kasevim, and V'Gam Ani Misatulam Kulkim Lo Tovim U'Mishpatim Lo Yishor. Yeah, what does it mean? It's been taken literally with a nigud. Okay, you have to learn with a nigud also. But I think perhaps included in the Gemara is included in the Gemara. I don't think this is such a pshat, but included in the comment that the Gemara makes is the following. You have some Talmidei Chachamim who are experts in halacha. They can formulate halacha. They can give you very sharp definitions. But when it comes to agada, they don't have any ability at all. When it comes to drush and avkiret, they don't have the kayach drush. And this is a little bit the song of Torah. You have to have halacha. You have to learn with a little bit of a nigun, with a little bit of a ruach hayim. You have to have agada also. And you have to have drush also. When the rav would say agada, it's merited. When the rav would say drush, it was Meiridik Sheva Meiridik. One of the Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and one of the Mizrahi, one of the Hezdi Yeshivas pointed out to me, I'm not familiar, he told me that Rav Kook writes in one of his essays that all of Machshava, Jewish philosophy, is important, but it all has to be based on Halacha. If you just give Machshava, that's not based on Halacha. So how do you know that you know what you're talking about? So this Rosh Yeshiva told me, and he learned a lot of Sifrei Rav Kook, I'm not familiar with all. He says, Rav Kook rather doesn't do it so much. He says, the one who does it was Rav Soloveitchik. The little that he read from Rav Kook, that's what he always did. The Rav would give a machshav, a rayon, would always be based on halacha. In Agadot, he can always float things, and Drush Avkiret, he can float and say whatever you want. You can float away in the clouds. But if you have a din, and the din indicates that this is the Hashkafas HaTorah, and then when you want to expand that Hashkafas HaTorah, the Mechatesis, and then you can expand a little bit. But the Makar and the Sharish has to be from something in the halacha. There is a very beautiful essay that's printed in Rabbi Bezdin's book, Reflections of the Rav. The first volume is a collection of 20 essays, 20 drushes that the Rav gave. So there's one knockout drusha that the Rav gave on an agadate in Sanhedrin Dav Zayin. And Davav and the Beis, the Gemara talks about din and shor, whether you're permitted to have shor. Then on Dav Zayin, the Gemara gave Tavek, a ganze list of agadate, 7 members in the Gemara. But the Gemara says, "Hahu the Habiko Ozil the Yomar," that there was a fellow who always used to say a certain Pisgama Mami, used to have a certain statement, and then the Gemara quotes an Amora who will back it up from a pasuk in Tanakh. So, what's going on over there? Why did the Gemara feel the importance of quoting a pasuk in Tanakh to demonstrate that the folk saying that this Pashat the Balabas said had any significance, that it had any source? And why does this appear in Sanhedrin in the middle of the Sugya of Pshara? What's the connection? So that's what Soloveitchik explained, and it's written over beautifully. The essays there are written over very beautifully. I would recommend it. It's written so clearly, an intelligent high school student can understand it well, but it's not on a low level. An older person will also see depth in the essays. They're very beautiful. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that Pshara is also a din Torah. That's what he said in the Shiur. Pshara is also a din Torah. That the din is a din Torah where you're paskening based on din. Shara is a din Torah where you're paskening based on lifnei mishuras hadin. Who is to determine what lifnei mishuras hadin is, what Yosha dictates? The seichel ha'adam. Who says that the person has seichel to know what's right? That's what the Gemara has a whole assumption that Jews have an intuition to have a certain common sense to judge what is Yosha dictate. Why should this be so? So Rav Soloveitchik quoted the Maimer in the Agadah in the Gemara in Liebe, which Rav Soloveitchik used to quote every so often in many drashas to bring out different ideas. So the Gemara says that before the baby is born, whether it's a baby boy or a baby girl, before a baby is born, the Malach teaches the baby Kabbalah, and then the Malach makes the baby forget. So if the Malach is going to cause the baby to forget, so what's the significance of teaching Kabbalah? So that's what the Rav says, in order that when the baby is born, he already has a natural inclination towards Avat Hashem, towards Shmiras HaMitzvah. The Rav quoted that the Rambam writes in the end of Parag Beis with Gerushin, that if a man doesn't want to give his wife a gift, and the Halacha says that he's supposed to give his wife a gift, so the Mishnah says, Makanoso, Achayama Rotani. You beat him up till he says Rotani. So the Gemara in Chesed Sabbatim asks, what good is that? He doesn't want to. So what good is it that you beat him up? So the Rambam quotes one of the answers that the Gemara gave. That must be a difficult Rambam, we should have passed from the other end, but the Rambam quotes the one answer that the Gemara gave, that his true inner self really wants, all along he wants. Navat is a pseudo-personality. His real ani really wanted all along, because every Jew really wants deep down in his heart, wants to do Ratzon Hashem. This is what the Baal HaTanya calls an Avraham Suteris, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam is very fond of quoting over this Baal HaTanya, with this Rambam, with this Gemara, with the Malach. He quoted several occasions that I heard. And Navat is a pseudo-personality, his Yetzirah that doesn't let him do the Ratzon Hashem. So then we beat him up, and then he says, Ratzani! He's got rid of this false personality, and the real Ani is not coming out, and he's saying what's really so. The real Ani really wants to give the get. He really wants to do Ratzon Hashem. By the Goyim, there's such a concept of tabula rasa. When a baby is born, he's born with no innate knowledge, no innate tendencies. Yeah, that's by Goyim, that's true. But by us, it's not so. We don't have tabula rasa, because the Malach has inculcated in us by teaching us Torah. He has inculcated the Ratzon to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the source of the Avraham Soteris. To get to that Avraham Soteris is by learning Torah. That's what the Rav said, that by the Zilna Goyen, I never saw this anywhere, I never heard it anywhere else. The Rav said, by the Zilna Goyen of Zilna, the minig was that he used to rope off the bima on Simchas Torah when they used to have the Hakotas. Why? They said, the Goyen said that the dancing on Simchas Torah with the Sifatera around the bima is really dancing around the Shechina. And the pasuk that you say in Atah HaReisa, etc. That's the key pasuk in the Atah HaReisa. The Gemara in the end of Maseches Taina says that Lasi Balak Hashem is going to make a machol. The tzaddik machol means a round circle, where the tzaddikim will be dancing around and pointing. Does that mean something that the Gemara of the Yedba will be pointing towards the Shechina? Will be in the middle, and they will say Hinel Kenu Zeh Kibidin Lo Yosheinu. So we today make this dance. Hashem HaAsid, we're preparing for the dance that's going to be Lasid Lovay. So when we're dancing around the bima, the Shechina is supposed to be in the middle. So the Gomagon was marked during the Hakofis, they should rope off the bima that nobody should walk there. The Shechina is there, so it's not proper that a boss of Adam should be there. So the Rav added on to this, we delay. He said, so why do you dance with different Torah around the Shechina? So he said, because all of the points around the circle represent the ideas if all the points are pointing towards the center. So the only way to reach the Shechina is by learning Torah. And he added on a minig, Agabi minig, he said, why is it that the other days of Sukkot we have to say the Torah in the middle and we dance around with the Dalet minim? He said it's a hemshech of a minig. The minig is that only through Shmiras HaMitzvahs can a person succeed to get to the center of the circle, to Liman HaTorah. If a person is going to learn Torah without Shmiras HaMitzvahs, he will not succeed in Liman HaTorah. Liman HaTorah is a different type of a discipline. And only through Liman HaTorah can a person succeed to get to the center of that circle, to get close to the Shechina. what the Rav explained in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Zayin. The Gemara quotes the Pizgamim Amamiyim, the folk sayings that the people had. And the Gemara says the folk sayings that Klal Yisrael say must be rooted in an intuition that they got from this Avraham Soteris, from the fact that the Malach taught them Kol HaTorah Kula, and they have this innate love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, proper hashkafas. Naturally, the moment these proper hashkafas, that we don't accept tabula rasa as far as B'nai Yisrael are concerned. So he said that's the Kavanas HaGemara, and that's why the Gemara felt compelled to find the Kuris in Tanakh to demonstrate that these Pizgamim were correct. And that's why the Rav used to consider minhagim a very serious thing. Minhag Yisrael Torah doesn't, he used to say, Minhag Yisrael Torah doesn't only mean that you're obligated to observe it. Minhag Yisrael Torah means that it's something that you have to learn, like Torah Hiblum and Aditzorah. You have to try to break your head to understand what the minhag is based on. And he used to spend a lot of his shiurim. If you're chazer over all the shiurim, of course, I'm not sure minhagim, there aren't too many minhagim, but in Yoni, Yorahad, Yoradeya, he used to spend a lot of time to explain what the minhagim are based on. And he was not too quick to change any minhagim. That's the mamish thing. Rabbi Natam says the minhag is based in Gehenim. Sometimes a minhag is a minhag toys and you don't have a minute to follow it. But unless it's mamish ascertained as a minhag toys, you assume that the minhag must have a very good shorish and it's something meaningful. The Rav, of course, pointed out that there are two different types of minhag that shouldn't be confused. Sometimes you have a minhag that develops from the people. That's this type of minhag. We assume that Klal Yisrael has this type of intuition to figure out something that's really a Ratzon Hashem, that the Rabbanu Shlomo really wants. Then you have a different kind of minhag that's instituted by the Chachamim, which is really along the lines of the Gzeirah or Takonah. Take, for example, that the Rav explained on the Sheni Shal Golias, there is a dispute in the Rishonim whether it's a minhag or it's in the Rabbanu. So the Rav was once asked, if Yom Tov Sheni Shal Golias is only a minhag, so how come we don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov Sheni? Yishleim, if it's a din de Rabbanu, so we understand, you can say Yesh Kerat Yerach Chachamim, Laka Domina Torah B'Shevi Al Tassus, so the Chachamim made a takana, not the like tefillin. But it's only a minhag. That's like minhag America, where people don't wear tefillin. Minhag America, they don't keep Shabbos, Kashrus, Tassus, Tassus, Tassus. What kind of a minhag is that? A minhag, not the like tefillin. Are you talking what kind of a minhag? So the Rav said, no, it doesn't mean that kind of a minhag that stems from the people. It's a minhag that stems from the Chachamim. He said that's a different kind of a minhag. That's the minhag. Rav Elbala talks about this in the Sefer. The Rav quoted the same Rambam. He wasn't familiar with what Rav Elbala had said. He used to joke about that from time to time. He used to say over something from his father on a Yoni Kachim. And then he said he heard this from his father, Kaidim Matan Torah. It means before Rav Elbala was saying Shiur. Before Rav Elbala was saying Shiur. He heard this from father, Kaidim Matan Torah. So he wasn't familiar. He wasn't familiar with what the Rav Chaim Sefer either. He never learned the Sefer. He heard about that. He didn't know the Rav Chaim from the Sefer. Say what he heard from his father. A lot of times it didn't correspond exactly to what it said. It was a totally different presentation, a lot of details of it. So Rav Elbala, he didn't know what Rav Elbala said, but he quoted the same Rambam. So the Rambam says that if one violates a minhag, he's in violation of Laisosur. So the Rav explained that's a different kind of a minhag, not a minhag that stems from the people. It was a minhag that the Chachamim introduced and encouraged the Balabatim to observe. So that type of minhag is something like a takana the Rabbam, that there would be a Laisosur. That's what the Rav said. That even the Rishonim say that Yom Tov Sheni Shal Golias is a minhag doesn't mean that it's a minhag that the people started. What it means is that it's a minhag that was introduced by the Chachamim and they encouraged everyone to follow it. The Rav didn't like to change minhagim. Just on rare occasions, he used to encourage the Rabbanim during Aseres Mei Tshuva. The Rav, for many, many, many years, used to give a drasha, also knockout drasha, Kinas Tshuva. Hundreds and hundreds of people would come from all over. So he always used to encourage the Rabbanim to reintroduce the reciting of slichas during Chazaras HaShatz. We only say slichas on Arma Zorim. We only say slichas on Ma'ariv, on Yom Kippur, and during Neilim. And the printer left out the slichas by Shachris and Musaf and Neilim. And Dor HaShulchan complains about that. He says the printers just wanted to save money. They wanted to charge the same money for the book and save money on printing all the papers. So they left out the slichas. He says there's no reason to leave out the slichas. Until very recently, the slichas were printed in the Machzorim. And the publishers, the printers didn't ask anybody's rishus to leave it out. So that's why Rav Soloveitchik also used to complain that it's not right, that really we should reintroduce the slichas, that unless it will cause a major war. But the same thing about Halalam El Pesach, he felt that the more correct practice was yes to recite Halal with the bracha, in shul, that the minyan. He said unless it will make a major disruption in the shul, unless it will make a mega machlokes, he thought that the rabbanim should be mishana, the minyan of the killers. We should introduce it. The Rav used to speak about, he was fond of telling all his story about duchening on Shabbos. He said when he first came to Boston, he was the Rav, I don't know all the details, but he said he was the Rav of a shul there. And the meaning of the shul was that they wouldn't duchen on Shabbos. So he said they weren't going to duchen. And he was very young and very fiery. And he let them know who's the boss, and he let them know that they have to duchen our house. So So he says he won the fight and he lost the shtetl. That before Yom Kippur he was fired already, and he lost the job. I don't know exactly, but he's still in Boston. I don't know exactly, he had a different job. I don't know exactly the historical details. So he told us in Shir, he said, boys, make sure when you go into the rabbinate, make sure that the people duchen, even when Yom Kippur falls on Shabbat. But you don't have to be moist and nefesh. If it means losing your shtetl, it's an akedei kaf, you don't have to fight about that. The Rav spent much time giving shiurim and dinim derabbanan. In Maria, he spent many, many years learning Masechet Brachos, and then after that learning Masechet Megillah, and here in Yeshiva also. He said, shiurim and Masechet Brachos to the Talmidim. So he explained that one shouldn't think that learning dinim derabbanan is only a mitzvah Talmud Torah but derabbanan, and minatera is bitul Torah. Minatera, you're learning nothing. You're wasting your time. So what did he waste all those 11 years in Maria, spending his time on Brachos? It's all dinim derabbanan. So he said, no. And he gave this distinction, which he alluded to on different occasions, that there are two parts to Torah. There's a Chavtza Shel Torah, and then there's the Chavis HaGavra. The Dinim Derabbanan, although the Chavis HaGavra to observe these, it's only with the Rabbanan, the obligation to observe these Derabbanans. It's only with the Rabbanan, but the Chavtza Shel Torah, it becomes Min HaTorah. It becomes a Chelik of the Torah Shel HaTorah, Min HaTorah. So as far as the mitzvah, fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, one would have a, he felt, one would have a Kiyum HaMitzvah Deraisa of Talmud Torah, even if he only learns Dinim derabbanan. Just to give a mashal, a matzav adayim, he referred to the Gemara in Erev in the first parak on Daf Yud Gimel, but the Gemara says that elu li elu dibri elikim chayim, speaking about all of the many disputes between Mishama and Bishilo. So the Gemara says, even though Bishama's opinion is not accepted, not only not accepted, it's absolutely rejected. The Gemara says in Brachas on Daf Lamed Vav, Bishama b'mok Bishilo ena mishne. It's not even considered a sofik koldo b'negiat the kolamekel boratz halacha k'maaseh b'chutz boratz. Nonetheless, the Gemara says in Erevin that one who studies Bishamai's opinion is not in violation of Bittul Torah. Even though you know in advance that this whole sugi is just going to be Bishamai, no Bishilul at all. The whole sugi is only Bishamai, you're spending all of your time understanding Bishamai's view, that doesn't constitute Bittul Torah, because what Bishamai said, there's no Chavis HaGavra, Halacha L'maaseh, we absolutely don't pass from like the Bishamai. But still, it's a Chavta of Torah. Dibur L'kim Chaim it is. And because all of the Dinim Derabbanan become Chelek HaTorah Shel Alpeh Min HaTorah, that's why the Chachamim always felt compelled to make Takanas de Rabbanon in the fashion of called the Tikka Rabbanon, came the Raisa Tikka. When they make a Takanas de Rabbanon, it has to fit in with rules and regulations, it has to be extension of Dinim de Raisa. So the Rav would often shtel Zachov and issue him on a Din de Rabbanon and give a whole pilpul and explain what, from a Din de Rabbanon, he would show what the Din de Raisa was. I remember he said a fantastic shiur on the Din de Rabbanon of Tevel, that before, after Miruach and before Rias Bnei Abayis, the Menatera wanted to permit it to eat Tevel, but the Rabbanon wanted to permit it to eat the Tevel, Achilas Keva. He wanted to permit it to eat Achilas Aroi. He says, where do you find such a Din? And he said, the Rabbanon, Acholas Asturis from Rabbanon, is only also Achilas Keva, Mut Achilas Aroi. You have also B'chol of the Rabbanon, you have Shemar Agid with the Rabbanon, you have so many Surim of the Rabbanon. You should make a distinction between Achilas Keva, Achilas Aroi. Never heard of such a thing. Elamai the Pshat is called the Tikkur Rabbanon, Kein Deraisa Tikkur. This is a reflection of what the Din Deraisa is on Tevel. Why is there a Din Deraisa that you have to have Rias Pnei Abayis? The answer is because whatever you eat before Rias Pnei Abayis is always labeled as Achilas Aroi. Whatever one eats after Rias Pnei Abayis is always labeled as Achilas Kevin. So that's the Hagdorah of the Din Deraisa. And called the Tikkur Rabbanon, Kein Deraisa Tikkur, that was an extension of the Din Deraisa. Some of the Rabbanon they introduced that there are other things that are Kaveya. I mean, I'll tell you, the only thing that's Kaveya is Rias Pnei Abayis. Rabbanon, they said that Mekach is Kaveya, and Melech is Kaveya, and Shabbos is Kaveya, and Bishul is Kaveya, and all the other things that are Kaveya. You're not allowed to eat Achilas Keva and Tevel. That's the Din Deraisa. And Yigdash Dal points out, there's a Pirush HaMishnayis or HaRambam where it says that. At the time, we didn't know that. But later on, years later, we found the Rambam writes like that, the whole verse from the beginning to the end. The Rav said this on many situations, on many cases. He would explain how the Dinim Derabbanan reflect Dinim Deraisa, and he would explain why it has to be so. Because in every discipline, you work with different categories of thought. If you're dealing with physics, or you're dealing with chemistry, you can't start talking about sines or cosines or integrals. If mathematics has its own language. Every discipline has its own categories of thought, has its own terminology, has its own concept. So when you're dealing with halacha, you have to have halachic concepts. You can't introduce some non-halachic concepts. So when the Rabbanon make dinim, the Rabbanon also has to be with halachic concepts. I remember the Rav was saying over the Rav Chaim, on Kotten Shehgiyo Lo'enes Hafutas, this doesn't appear, Rav Baruch Be'er quotes this Rav Chaim, but when you read Rav Baruch Be'er on Kiddushin, some of you wouldn't be able to make heads or tails that Rav Baruch Be'er has fully written there. And many people who read it from the Birch HaShmuel will swear that Rav Baruch Be'er said one thing. But after you hear the shir from the Rav, and then you read Rav Bochler afterwards, then the stomach, it reads better the way the Rav said, like Dr. Lynn told over the story yesterday. After the Rav said the whole shir, and then he said, now read the Chedush Aran. Now it reads a little better. So the Rav Bochler quotes from Chaim what the Rav said over like this. The din of cotton shehigir lones taputos, even though the child is not bar mitzvah, the cotton is a lot bar das, how can he make a chamemkar? It's not chal, can you need das? So the Rav Bochler made a takon, he can make kinyon. So the Rav said, b'shem Rav Chaim, how can that be? With the Chachomim Chassidish Rebbe that they can make a moifis, they can give the child that's not bar mitzvah das? It's a chalam bar das. How can they make a moifis and give him das? That was the Lashon. He said in Yiddish. No, the Teretz is they didn't come up. They cannot give the child das if he's a lab das. They said to make a kinyan with the Rabbanon, there's no need for das. It's enough with kavon. But the Kotna has kavon, and he gave a whole arichas on this. Rav Chaim has enough to even mechalitza on this. But even our cotton is a lot about that, but he is a bar hoch. He has kavona. Whenever the halacha just says that you need kavona, or rotzen, or machshove, so cotton is a bar hoch. Rav Chaim has sugis to indicate that this is so. So then Rav Chaim continues to explain, but that's only shayach, that's only feasible by medrash and murim, by all other kinyonim. But if you want the cotton shigil or anachachutis to make a kinyon sudir, by kinyon sudir, Rav Chaim explained the beer on the Rambam, there is no maisa kinyon at all. The symbolic act of giving over the handkerchief is just a symbol to demonstrate that there's a gemiras das. And the Gemara's das accomplishes the kinyan. So if the cotton is a labadas, life to the halabadas. How can a chacham say over there by suder that the cotton can make a kinyan suder with kavon alone without das? The whole kinyan consists of das. By another kinyan, hagboa, mishicha, kesef, something else, where the kinyan consists of the maisi kinyan, and you need das in addition that it should be a meaningful maisi kinyan. So the chacham can say, no, we'll make all over here. You don't need das, kavon is enough. But the whole kinyan consists of das. So they're going to say, what are you going to say? The kid has das. He doesn't have das. He can't make a maisha. This is one of the applications that the Rav had. It stands out very vividly in my mind when the Rav spoke at Columbia, when on the occasion of the Catholic Church, I don't know exactly the Lashonis in their Avodah Zarah, but they had a convention of their Galochim in the Vatican to decide that the Jews are no longer to be held guilty for the killing of their God. So Rav Soloveitchik spoke, and therefore, now that they have absolved us of the guilt of killing Otto Huish, and now we should live together in peace and harmony, and we should be a little more friendly. They wanted to show friendship towards the Jews. So Rav Soloveitchik gave a major address at that time, I remember, at Columbia University, and he explained at that time what the pshat in this psak din was. What are they driving at? So he says, what does it mean that the Catholics hold the Jews responsible for killing Otto Huish? Are they ridiculous? We were the ones who killed Otto Huish. Didn't in Tzilayma that the Jews killed them. Those are the Jews who lived 2,000 years ago. What has it got to do with us? So he said, the Teretz is that when they say that the Jews killed Otto Huish, it means that we continue to kill them today. That's just a melitza. They don't mean those who are mavega harget Otto Huish. When you say you don't believe in their Avodah Zarah, that's, in their language, that's the same as saying that you killed their God. Not believing in their Avodah Zarah means that you killed them. So what does it mean? Why are they prepared to absolve the Jews of the guilt of killing Otto Huish? So he explained that there, according to their understanding, there's going to be a second coming in the year 2000, but there's a condition, there's a hitch, that also wishes that Yechayen and Yomoyim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about this in Perikhenik, there's a whole dispute about the Kiva and the Chachomim, how to understand the part of Yechayen and Yomoyim. So the Christians also have their own pshat, that Yoshka is coming back after 2,000 years, in the year 2000. So they hold, part of their belief is, that also wish will only be turned from the dead, if all of the Jews will believe in him, if all of the Jews will be converted to Christianity, but if the Jews will still be rejecting him, so then he's not going to come back. So the worried is not going to come back from the dead. So they're stepping up at this, that was around a long time ago, 30 years ago, what was it? At that time they started pouring in millions and millions of dollars into missionizing, into missionary activities all over the world, America and Arizona, all over the world, to get as many Jews to convert to Christianity as possible. So the Rav said, that's what it means. That's what it means. They're absolving us of the guilt of killing Yoshke, because they're going to see to it that we're not going to be guilty. They're going to see to it that we're all going to embrace him. We're all going to convert to Christianity. So he said, that's terrible. We shouldn't give him a Yashikoya for that. They want to shmad up all the Edens. It's ridiculous. And he said, how do I know that this is pshat in their statement? They said, at that time, Father taught me how to read in between the lines. He says, he reads what they have in the newspapers. He says, he reads it, and he understands that that's what it means. I remember several years ago, he started reading Yeshiva Rabbi's Rubovel Shutan. He was very close to the Rav from years ago. He was one of the older Talmidim, from the early Talmidim of Rav. So he wrote up, before he passed away suddenly, he wrote up a few pieces from Rav Soloveitchik, which were printed, I think, in Hamavase or the commentator. six or seven pieces. I think this was one of them. That one night after the Rav finished the Shira Moriah for the Balabatim, there was a fantastic Shira on Agarit in Brochus. The Rav spent so much time explaining every Agarit. It's Aloha, even if the Balabatim don't understand, they'll understand that it's Aloha. So they don't understand. But in Agod, if they don't understand, they'll think that the Gemara is saying stupid things. So the Rav used to spend an awful lot of time to explain all the Agaritas, all the Chalomis, at the end of Brochus. The Gemara interprets all the dreams. He would spend many, many hours explaining every Cholom, why this Cholom means this and this means this, and every Agarit. Sometimes there was just fantastic explanation reports from the Marina Huchim and from the Kuzari and from all over the place. Everything that had his access, he would quote other Mamori Chazal, other Agarata, just in order to explain this Agarata to him. So on one occasion, Rabbi Shusan Zuchan Lerochi asked the Rav, where did you get the tradition to interpret like that? Where do you get it from? So the Rav asked him, why don't you ask me that about my Shiurim and Halacha? Where did I get that from? So Rav Shusan said, well, more or less, we can figure that out. You know, the Rishonim have a little bit, and the way people think today is the modern way of thinking. So we have a little bit, so you have a little better than us. You can understand the difference better than me. I got it. Mom was like, Yesh Meyayin. Where did he get it from? So he said, no, my father taught me how to read in between the lines. He taught him how to read in between the lines in Halacha. He taught him how to read in between the lines in Halacha. I got it. And he taught him how to read in between the lines and the Catholic documents also. But Rav used to analyze everything. Yesterday, Rav's son, concluded his remarks by mentioning what a strong bond there was between the Rav and his Talmidim, that there was such an attachment that was somehow more so than with other Talmidim Chachamim in an unusual way. So remember, I seem to remember on one occasion I was very young. I don't know, there must be tapes of this. I remember when I was very young, the Rav held a drasha at one of the Chagas Michas in the auditorium, and he spoke about why a Talmud Chacham is called a Chover. Chover and Tzarach Hasroa, Sechizmai, all the Yom Chover. So he quoted the Pirush HaMishnayis Lahar Rambam, and Pirkei Avos, but the Rambam speaks about Chover, he spoke about different types of Chover. So the Rav spoke at that time about why, when one transmits the Masoret to somebody else, why is there such a strong bond? And on other occasions, on later occasions, he also spoke about this. If I'm not mistaken, this is also written up in Rabbi Bezdin's second volume of the Roshas from Rav Soloveitchik, where the Rav, this was written up in one of the issues of Kavrusa, of the rabbinic alumni, I think Rabbi Nerf Goldstein wrote this up. And the Rav on different occasions would speak about this. He once depicted, but he was an old man and he comes into the shir and he can come walk into the shir and he comes in and he sees these young faces, the young bachrim. He says, what do I have to offer to these guys? These guys are so young and they're so vibrant and I'm an old man, I'm falling apart. And then they're all staring at him and he starts reading the Gemara and he gets stuck in the Rashi and then he gets the kasha against Rashi. And all of a sudden the Rambam comes and the door opens. And the Rambam walks into the room, and the Rambam helps us out and shouts in the Gemara. And all of a sudden the Shach comes in, and the Shach screams at the Rambam. And he says, what are you talking about? And then all of a sudden the Nesivus comes in, and he defends the Rambam. And then my grandfather comes in, and he argues with the Nesivus. And then one of the young boys pipes up, and he starts saying, then another boy says, and then by the end of the shir, everybody's involved. It's a Levitic and Masura from all the generations, from 2,000-3,000 years. From the Tkuva Satanoim, till the Amaroim, till the Rishonim, till Achrayim, until today, everyone is involved. And then he becomes the Rav. So he became invigorated as Mamish and Metzias. The people saw it many times, both in the Yeshiva and in Maria, and the lady is the Rav. So Shvach. And he would come to say the Shir. He would a lot of times start the Shir. He could come, correct Zeis to pronounce the word. But then as he kept on saying the Shir, he became so invigorated. At the end of the Shir, he had Chiz. So he was speaking about this type of concept of chover, of a bind that connects one generation to the other, and he referred to the Mishnah in Eidias that speaks of the Hemshech Hadoros, the connecting link between one generation and the other. I remember on one occasion the Rav spoke for the rabbinic alumni, if I'm not mistaken, must have been in the Pine View, a very beautiful talk. At that time he was explaining, I spoke many times, I mentioned in my shiur, he spoke at that time about the fact that some professor from the seminary had published in a book that the thing that prompted the Tanoim to be makel so much in the construction of a sukkah, to say lovewood, and to say shtayim kolchas mishlishas afi the tefach, and to say gurachas and gurasik, was because in the days of the Tanoim there was a scarcity of wood, and Eretz Yisrael there weren't enough trees. And there was a Shas HaTchak, so they had to be makel and to say that all these coolers and the sukkah doesn't have to be so built up with so much wood. So the Rav said that per se, he doesn't consider the person of the curse just because he said that. Could be that was the motivating factor that prompted the Chachamim to get together and call their and break their heads in order to figure out to give Zechan Eitzah what to be Mekah. But he says that doesn't explain the formula, why it works. You can't just say this is Shas Havchak, so it's going to work. Shas Havchak doesn't help. So he gave a mashal Ma'adav Adayma that during the period of the Second World War, the American government realized that the Nazi Germans were working on atomic energy. They also had big physicists. And if Cholila, they would have developed an atomic bomb before America, they would have controlled the whole world. So the American government got a whole bunch of Einstein with the geniuses together, they made the atom bomb, and then they saw to it that they won the war. So what prompted the American government to make the atom bomb? Shas Havchak fighting with the Nazis. So if you want to understand how come atomic energy works, it's simple. There was a war with the Nazis, and they had to make a conference, and they got together. Shas Havchak said, made it. So he said, that's the historical background. That doesn't explain the formula. You have to give a formula to explain it. So he said, the same as the Gemara says, Mishum Miguna Kili Berabonim. What do you mean, Kili Berabonim? So what's the kula? There was a Mokka Migun, the Goyim were killing a lot of Jews, and then disappeared. A woman of Ragunas, there was a Shas Havchak. So that was the motive, the motivating factor that prompted the Tanoim to get together and try to be Mitakeh Seitzah, to give Zechan Eitzah, what can you come up with? So they came up, the Gemara said, so they came up with a din, there is a din in other areas of Halach and Chulin and Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara has a klal, al Musa David Ibn Loi Meshakri in Shiri. The Gemara has other klalim, when you have Isha Daikon Mitzvah, when you have a lot of Daikonis, it's a Ruba the Lenin to come on. So the Gemara came up, the Gemara says, the Tanoim came up with something. They came up with a formula. The formula has to explain how the Halacha functions. Just to say that there's a Shas Havchak, and therefore we should be going to kill the Rabbanu, that's just the historical background, but that doesn't explain what the formula is. He said, it's Nitan Layom, as far as he's concerned, it could well be that there was a scarcity of wood in the days of the Tanoim, and they thought, look, if we're not going to give some kind of a kula, the people just won't be able to sit in sukkah, so they convened a conference of Rabbanu, and they said, whoever has an idea should come up with it. And someone must have, perhaps someone came up with an idea, said, look, there's a din of Lovet and Hilchos Shabbos. Even though there, it's a din of mechitzah, here it's a din of doifin, and it's not exactly the same. So maybe hachmaskin, maybe that's what happened. They discussed, and they came to the conclusion that who had the nami in hilchos sukkah, and there was a din of gudachas and gudasik in hilchos shabbos. So maybe they were tilfling whether they should apply that to hilchos sukkah. They came up with that also, but he says that doesn't explain the formula. The formula has to be worked out over here. The historical background is chikava information. I remember there used to be a course here, maybe there still is, a course in the college for the non-science majors. I took the chemistry course for the non-science majors. So they used to give the history of chemistry, what prompted them, what brought about, this one had a dream, with the molecules dancing in a circle. I already forgot the whole, what the atom, what the thing, what element it was. But five molecules dancing in a circle in the shape of a hexagon, whatever. But that doesn't explain what the essence of the thing is. This is the historical background. So the same over here. So I remember on that occasion when the Rav held that long drasha, that was some beautiful drasha, that should really be, I don't know if it's printed. So on that occasion he was reading from the Rambam and the Hakdamah to the Yad HaChazaka. So the Rambam writes that Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching the Torah to Pinchas and Elazar and Yeshua ben Nun. And then he was Meiser the Torah to Yeshua ben Nun. One line after the other. The first page in the Rambam Hakdamah says, it's very striking, Moshe, very strange. He just said, the Rambam just said that he taught the whole Torah to everybody, and especially to Dinchas and Elazar and to Yeshua. And then he says, and he was Moshe the Torah to Yeshua, Vitzivehu Olo. He just said he taught it to them. So he said, no, a Rebbe can have many Talmidim. And everybody listens, and there are those who are sharper than others. But then the Mesiras HaTorah Shebaal Peh is only given to one or two, it's not given to everybody. So that's what the Rambam says, the one who became the Baal HaMasor was only Yeshua ben Nun, and he gave an Arichas, because he was Meshamish Moshe Rabbeinu. He was Mishamish Moshe Rabbeinu more than the other. So the Rav said that there are many people who are great Talmidei Chachamim, but they're not necessarily considered Baalei HaMasor. The Baalei HaMasor were those to whom was given over the whole big bundle, the big package of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So many of us always had the feeling that the Rav had this tremendously bulky, heavy Masoira, which consisted that he had from his father, from his grandfather, and from other Goyim. He didn't only talk to the two grandfathers. He spoke to other great people as well. The Rabbi could tell us that he spoke to Rav Baruch Ber, and he said, he was little bit Ishtar, Rav Baruch Ber knew every Tosfos in Gittin Baal Peh. He was so surprised. He spoke to Rav Shimon Shkok, he spoke to Rav Hanach Hege, he spoke to Rav Chaim Oizer a lot in learning. He spoke to many Gedolim, there were many people around. So Rav Soloveitchik, Zechanah Livracha, had this tremendous Masoira from his Rabbeim, a Masoira which consisted of Gemara, and Yisoides and Hashkafe, and Hanhoges, and Psokim, and a style how to paskin, not just particular Psokim, and particular Hanhoges, a style how to paskin, had his own style, his own unique style, and many stories. Yesterday, Dr. Twersky pointed out that a lot of the Rosh Machshava is based on a lot of the stories. The stories that he used to tell over the years, he never sat down on one occasion to tell over 100 stories, but over the years he told over many hundreds of stories. Many of those stories were in connection with halacha, to give the historical background of tshuvas, some chikava stories about certain halachic debates or disputes that got people interested in learning. Many of you are familiar with Rabbi Raketa from Eretz Israel. So he published an essay about the Kli Beget, and he writes an introduction. He was so inspired to research the topic, because the Rav made it so fascinating in Shia. The Rav made it like a mystery about what was going on with that Kli Beget. So that's what inspired him to go read up all the Svarim and to write an essay about it. The Rav used to make many issues in Halacha very fascinating just by stories. So he had a peckle of stories that was part of his Masorah, stories that in connection with Halacha, and stories which demonstrated Hashkafe, points of living Hashkafe in life, how Dolim, how Goyim, and how Tzaddikim throughout all the generations lived out certain Yisoides in Hanhogim. And part of the Rav's Masorah was Minhogim. He would say all the Minhogim from Brisk, and Minhogim from other communities, and he would explain many of the Minhogim, beautiful Minhogim, that most people today never heard of. And the Rav, different from many other people, different from most of the many, there were many great Talmid Chachamim. The Rav, more so than others somehow, he had the distinct sense that he was really one of the Balei HaMasorah. He was transmitting this Masorah. Of course, he couldn't pass on the whole Masorah. If he give one shiur, he tried to give everything that he knows on that Gemara, so the students would walk away with nothing. They wouldn't be able to understand anything. So like Dr. Gorski said yesterday, the Rav always had to be mitzamtim himself. If he wouldn't be mitzamtim himself, if he wouldn't restrain himself, we would have gotten lost. We wouldn't understand anything. So he gave a little bit now, a little bit later, a little bit later. But over the course of all the years, he tried to transmit hakol, bakol, mikol, kol. He tried to tell over all of these hanhoges and all of the psokim and the style of psak and halacha and the agoda and the drush and the machshove and the minhogim. Everything he tried to transmit. So in a certain sense, my feeling was that that's why there was such a unique bond between himself and all of his talmidim. Because this really represented to us one of the Balei HaMasorah. This was the special, that's what Masorah is all about. The link of the one generation to the other. In a certain sense, the Rav felt how heavy this Masorah was that he was transmitting, and this, in a certain sense, humbled him very much. He never really had the, I don't think he ever had the perception, because no one had the perception of himself, but he never had the perception of how much influence he had on other people and what position he played in the Jewish community. He never understood that if he had hundreds of people come all the time to the shiurim and so on. If he would have told people that they should be medactic in a certain din, everyone would have been medactic on it. Many of the dinim they told, somehow he never realized that. He never realized what position he played, because he was like so busy carrying on this big masorah. He was so involved in transmitting this masorah that he never realized that. He never realized his position. And the Gemara in Bracha says, commenting on the pasuk of Chumash, "Vahidaitam levanecha v'levnei vanecha yom shamarta lefnei Hashem alkecha b'chorei." We should teach the Torah to our children. We should transmit the Torah to our children in the same way that the Torah was given to us at Har Sinai. That just like at Har Sinai, the Torah was given the aim of the year of the rest, to the ziyah, and they saw the trembling, by yarom, by yonu, by yam de mirachit, they were sittering. So too, throughout all the generations, the Torah should be transmitted from one generation to the next with such an aim of year of rest and ziyah. We used to sit the Rav Shiv used to titter. I remember when I was a little boy, the Rav Shiv, I used to have the distinct feeling as if the Malachim had come down from heaven on Tuesday and Wednesday morning to hear the Rav Shiva in the classroom. We used to have Kriyat HaTorah Monday and Thursday, and we used to have Kabbalah HaTorah from the Malachim. It's like Torah Min HaShemayim was given again, Torah Min Sinai was given in the Shia. The Shia was so convincing. It was like Abchin of Shechina Medaberes in Tachrona. It was so levitated. Mamish like Vorms Nechen Kinesinasa Min Sinai. And we had the distinct feeling that this is Mamish a man who's linking us up with the whole Masorah, he's transmitting to us the whole baggage, tremendous, tremendous baggage of the Masorah. Many of the things that he said, the Shas Maise, we used to wonder, what kind of Baba Maise is this? Is it really true? He told the story about Rav Chaim, told another story, and it took us years later till we found a print that other people told over the same story. They would say, Pshat, we would wonder. Just last week, in Shira, I was learning the Mark Sudas about Eight other Mace Matsme Russia. And I didn't understand for over 35 years what my Rebbe had said on the Sugi of Ainu Nesmes until we learned it last week. I understood what was bothering him. I never understood what was the thing he kretched. And there were so many things that the Rav said, and I just tuned off my hearing aid. I figured the week. I figured, what is he talking? He's off the walls. What is he talking about? So I stopped listening. I thought it was utterly wrong. And then years later, I saw this safe and that safe, and I couldn't understand what in the world are they talking about. And I felt so bad. If I would have paid attention, I would have understood it. The Rav said the same language, and Mishas Maaseh didn't know what he was talking about, so I didn't pay attention. And other Goyim said the same thing, and they don't explain what they mean. The Rav commented on different occasions of different Hespedim. He had Hespedim for many Goyim. He commented, he mentioned the Gemara in the end of Perek Avimisis in Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says when Rav Lezer was about to die and the Talmidim, the Tanoim, came to visit him. So he said he learned so much from his Rabbein, but he barely learned Kikelot HaMalakik Minayam. And he tried to transmit, Rav Lezer Agadol tried to transmit so much to his Talmidim, but he didn't really succeed. He only was able to give them Mamish Kimikho B'Shoferes HaShmek Tavik, nothing. So the Rav commented on that Gemara, that the Gemara is describing the sort of the tragedy that's always involved in giving over a Masur, that whenever you give from one generation to the other, the Rebbe tries to give everything, like the Gemara has, and they end up talking, commenting on the way the Tanaim are learning one from another. So the Gemara says, Yosin Masha Ha'egel Ratzelina Kapara Ratzelahonik. When the cow is full of milk, when the others are full of milk, so the mother is paying, so the mother wants more to get rid of the milk, then the baby wants to drink the milk, to suck the milk. So the Gemara comments on Talmidei Chachamim, who have a tremendous, tremendous baggage of a Masorah, that they have a greater desire to transmit the Masorah than the Talmidim have a desire to learn that Masorah, to receive that Masorah. So the Rav commented that that's what Rav Lezer is commenting. He's not just saying on himself and his Talmidim. This is about always does in all the generations. That's what Masorah is always about. The one who has this tremendous Masorah has a responsibility and a great desire to transmit everything to the next generation. And it's just impossible. It's not shy. And I remember on one occasion of the Yahrzeit Shir, I think the Rav mentioned in the middle of the Chelek HaDorah, the Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara says that Rav passed away, and then the Talmidim had traveled to the Beis HaKvaros, and on their way back, they stopped off these sandwiches by a certain river, and then they washed it, so it's a daim, and then it was a shayla when it came to benching, can they bench mezumin on that? In order to bench mezumin, it didn't require the atat shloshe shaflu ka'achas. The Rav gave a shir on benching mezumin, so at the end of, he always used to give on the yard side, the night of the yard side, he would give a shir and halacha for 4 hours at least. In the earlier years, later years, it was already a week, he didn't give so long, but in the earlier years, he would give 4 hours, he'd give 2 hours halacha and 2 hours agadah. And then in the morning of the yard side, he would give shir all day long at Mishnah. He used to, he was davening shachar, then he would leave, he would fast. The family tradition was that they never fasted, only on Yom Kippur. So the time of his up, that everybody today is a Chodesh Shem Sakana. The Rav said he doesn't follow the family tradition, he doesn't hold that it's a Chodesh Shem Sakana. He eats and he drinks and he's healthy and he feels that he's healthy enough to fast. Because he not only fasts the Tisha B'Av and all the other times, he needs to fast on the Yahrzeit also. So he would tell the boys, he's not going to eat breakfast, they should go eat, and he'll start learning Mishnayos at 9 o'clock. So he used to learn, start Mishnayos at 9 o'clock many years. So he learned straight from 9 o'clock to 4:30, January time. And several occasions, the boys had to tell him, you have to dive in, he's going to be the shtir. He would learn all day long. The students would have finals then, they would have college classes, the dean would walk in and go out. After Belfenstein had to come and he had to go to meetings, the boys would go to the bathroom, go to eat lunch, and he would be oblivious of what was going on. He'd just sit and learn Mishnayos the whole time. And nobody had a base medish for the people the whole day long. That was the yard side. The night of the yard side, there would be 4 hours here, 2 hours, halacha, 2 hours, I got it. And in the morning, he would give the shiur all day long in Mishnayos, the atheist, Moshe, then Chaim HaLev. He never got so far. He never learned so many problems in Mishnayos, Moshe, then Chaim HaLev. On one occasion, he wanted to chap arayin, so he learned the first parak in Pirkei Avos, that chap tov. Moshe kibbutz on it, he didn't finish the first parak. So he learned Mishnayos the whole time, didn't finish the first parak in Pirkei Avos, because he was giving so many comments. So I remember on one occasion when he gave the Yortzeit Shir on the Sugya, most of the time the Shir was on an Inyan and Orachayim. So Tere, Kiddush, Abdullah, Suda Shabbos, these kind of easy topics, Adoras HaShav, these kind of easy topics that the people could follow. On one occasion he decided to give, said that he's giving a Shir on the occasion of his father's Yortzeit. But he ought to say, well, it's something that he heard from his father. These, all the Orachayim things he worked at on his own, he didn't hear from his father. So one year he decided to say a real Tika Shir on Shtaris. This he heard, he thought, well, but the Shir that he heard from his father, and he said, the Sira, Deacon, the Rambam. Then he gave a whole shiur to explain why the deus was correct and why the din is correct, and he saw that the Olam didn't follow. But most of the people can't follow such a shiur. So the next year he got up and he said, and he saw that last year wasn't so good, he's going back to our Chaim again. He's not going to stand in Hashem and Zikin because they won't follow. So on one occasion he gave the shiur, and the topic got benched in the Zoom. So in the Chelek HaGodah he mentioned this Gemara, that the Gemara says when he came back from the Levaya of Rav, That is why they can eventually resume that. It's called the Schlosser Schlosser Kacha. What is Kacha? Because they didn't really make up the favors that they were going to eat together. But one of the Amorim said, we should rip free again. That Noch Nafshe Derav, the Rebbe just died, but Birchus Nezoyna Lagamina. We don't even know how to finish resume. It's the Shunadik. We learned by the Rav for so many years, and we always used to answer our things. And then a few years ago, when the Rav took sick, they started to have Shilas. I'm only talking about Shilas and all that brain death, major issues, you know, the big bunch of simple Shilas in your day, Shilas. Simple things. And we have Shilas. How do you understand? Is it this way or that way? And we felt such idiotic. We felt like idiots. Why didn't we ever ask the Rav? Mamash like the Gemara. Noch Nafshe Derav. A Birchus Nezoyna Lagamina.